Baslayer's release, Celestial Lineage, comes out September. Can you give us a little bit more of the, you know, details about the concept and ideas behind this album?
Yeah, totally. Celestial Lineage is the last record of a trilogy that includes our previous two albums, Two Hunters and Black Cascade, all of which came out on Southern Lord. And this record is not only the last record in this trilogy, but in a lot of ways we're looking at it as maybe not the last Wolves in the Throne Room record, but certainly the last record that we're going to make in this incarnation. You know, we're definitely planning on changing a lot of things about the music we do and just our focus in life. You know, for the past 4 years or so, ever since 200s came out, Wolves in the Throne Room has basically been our full-time priority. And it's been, you know, really good and a really good experience, and I think we've accomplished a lot and I feel really good about it. But I'm definitely ready to shift my focus back to things at home. You know, I think that most people know that my wife and I have a organic farm here in Olympia, and I'm pretty committed to a pretty quiet rural lifestyle, and that's where I'd like to shift my focus. So yeah, it's probably the last time that we're going to be out in the road really hard and really hitting it like we have been in the past couple of years.
And, I mean, if you don't mind us asking, what do you think? I mean, you guys gained a lot of traction. You've been working hard. So it kind of seems, you know, anticlimactic that you guys decide to, you know, split up now. But, I mean, any other, you know, particular reasons you're getting, you know, kind of, you think you achieved all you wanted to achieve with the band?
It's not like we're going to split up or anything. You know, Wolves in the Throne Room is always going to be a part of our lives. The main reason is that, you know, I think that most bands would want to just keep building, keep getting bigger, you know, keep making more money, bigger tours, nicer tour bus, all this kind of stuff. And we just don't have those kind of goals. You know, we don't have any interest in being a professional band. We don't want to be headlining Wacken or have some sort of fancy backstage catering. You know, we're really interested in, if anything, going the opposite direction. Keeping things more obscure, more underground, more in line with our true vision and our ethic, rather than just getting sucked into the machine, you know.
And, you know, in terms of the musically, I mean, where do you think you want to pursue now? I mean, what kind of, you know, ventures do you want to experiment on?
Well, we definitely plan on making another record after this one. It's not going to be a total 180. You know, we're not going to do the kind of thing that Oliver did, release two really brutal, harsh black metal records and then, start doing trip-hop or techno or something. You know, we'd never do that. You know, if anything, we're just going to expand on the ideas that we've worked with in the past, you know, especially on this record. The more orchestral music, choir, more ambience, more psychedelic, trance, scapes. You know, that's the kind of stuff that really is exciting to me. But of course, it'll always have a metal sensibility to it. That's interwoven into the DNA of Wolves in the Throne Room. You can't get rid of the metal.
How do you guys, find the perfect balance between, you know, rawness and this neat and this more... more sounding, orchestral stuff and choir stuff that you guys added on this album?
As far as, like, finding a balance between, balance in the sound, making sure that we keep that raw energy. You know, one way we do it is really limit ourselves in terms of the technology that we use. Most metal bands nowadays, they run all their drums through Drum Replacer and quantize it to the grid in Pro Tools, and it's this very sterile sort of process. Of course, most bands use all sorts of other digital technologies to make the music sound, you know, brutal, I suppose, or what people think sounds brutal. And we've never done that. We've always tried to use equipment and recording gear that's decrepit and falling apart and dusty, and maybe has some history to it. And I think that's one of the ways that we avoid any sort of slickness or any sort of, you know, cheesy kind of bombastic qualities to our music. And, you know, as far as, like, deciding how much metal to incorporate into a record and how much orchestral or choral stuff to do, I mean, we never really think about it. We just kind of make the record that seems right at the time. You know, when we made Black Cascade, we felt very strongly we should just make a more straightforward metal record, focused more on riffs and drumming and kind of more traditional black metal elements. And with this record, yeah, we just knew that we wanted to open up the door to experimentation.
And how do you feel that, you know, over the years you've evolved as a musician since, I mean, the sound of the band has been transforming but has that, you know, raw energy behind it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's an obvious progression. Of course, the playing gets a little bit better over the years, and I think the songwriting becomes a little bit better as you, understand the nature of that craft. But honestly, like, Nathan and I don't really consider ourselves musicians at all. You know, we're not the kind of people who practice drums and guitar. You know, when I'll get home from tour, I'll put my drums in their cases, and they'll sit in the practice space for 6 months before I work with them again. You know, for me, it's always been more about soundscapes and texture and ideas and the spirit of the music. And it just so happens that we use, certain black metal or heavy metal instrumentation to get there. But that, you know, honestly, the music side of it in a lot of ways is kind of secondary to me. And mainly because, like, I'm not the kind of person who's really passionate about practicing an instrument. You know, I'm more interested in just sort of getting to the heart of the matter, trying to channel the energy of something.
Yeah. And, I mean, coming from the U.S., I mean, a lot of the people don't even realize the band is from here. What do you think that, you know, is there something in the water that made you guys, you know, be pretty much set apart from the rest of the American bands?
Yeah, I think the, you know, one thing that we've always done, and I think that people appreciate it, is we've always been very clear that we don't want to try to copy European black metal. You know, we've always been very clear that we want to take aspects of black metal and we'll transform it to our own ends, and we'll use it to reflect our own experiences and our own sort of vision, with no regard for the conventions or the orthodoxy of what people think black metal should be. And of course, Wolves in the Throne Room, gets all kinds of flack for that. People would say that we're, you know, hipsters or fags or communists or hippies or whatever, you know. I appreciate that. I appreciate that people recognize that we're not another cookie-cutter black metal band. I mean, anyone who knows us knows we're not hipsters. You know, we're people who have been involved in heavy metal since we were, you know, 12, 13, 14 years old. And the music that we do is, you know, deadly serious. It really comes from our heart. But at the same time, it's not straight-up black metal. You know, we're not going to try to stick to any sort of rules or any sort of boundaries that other people want to set on the music. You know, it's really important. I think it's very, very important that black metal be a space that really allows for freedom and allows for people to express themselves in whatever way that they want. You know, I think it's really kind of sad and pathetic that people have taken black metal and, imposed some sort of strict set of rules on it. I think that really goes against the spirit of what the music is all about.
Yeah, that is quite true. Everybody seems to be wanting to do, you know, be the next Corey Graves, Darkthrone, something like that, without focusing on originality.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man, I love Gorgoroth. I love Darkthrone, but why would you want to make your band sound exactly like Gorgoroth and Darkthrone? Yeah, it blows my mind. And of course, I think there's some great black metal bands that stick very strictly to you know, the conventions of the genre. You know, I think Watain is great. I think Decibel Omega is great. But then, of course, there's, you know, literally thousands of cookie cutter people who don't have a whole lot of creativity that are just trying to you know, rehash something that's already been perfected by other people.
And what is your take on, you know, the pretty much the whole North American scene, where it's more like, you know, the trendy bands, the trendy genres are the ones that get most of the attention, but you guys still manage, you know, to come up with records, tour, get fans and everything.
Yeah, man, like, honestly, I don't really keep up on the black metal scene. I mean, I'd be kind of curious, like, who are some of the bands that are kind of trendy out there that people take notice of in the, you know, that would be kind of labeled black metal?
Well, pretty much, yeah, black metal, it's not trendy yet. I mean, I think probably the biggest, trendiest one should be, like, what, Dimmu Borgir and Cradle of Filth.
Oh, yeah, that kind of shit, yeah, of course. Yeah, man, I just saw, we're pretty good friends with the guys in Nocmistium. Will, who used to play in Wolves in the Throne Room, is now doing some session work with Nocmistium, so we went to go see them when they were opening up for Cradle of Filth in Seattle. And, man, that was like a serious reminder to us about why we don't want to be a, you know, professional metal band. You know, it just turns into a joke, you know, if you, like, you know, I guess I'm not going to rip on Cradle of Filth, but, you know, clearly that music is, it's entertainment. You know, it's music that they're probably cranking out because it pays their mortgage at home. And yeah, I'm sure they're nice guys, but it doesn't have the intensity or the brutality of black metal that truly comes from the underground, you know.
Yeah, pretty much. And how do you feel that, you know, you perceive whenever you tour in Europe versus touring in the U.S., which you rarely do?
How we were perceived, I think that people understand that we're doing our own thing. You know, when the first time we toured Europe, I was kind of surprised that the majority of the people in the audience were, you know, really traditional black metal people, you know, like a really hardcore traditional European black metal crowd. And I really appreciated that. And I think it's because, you know, these hardcore European black metal fans respected the fact that we weren't just trying to be another, you know, immortal copy or another Dark Throne copy, that we were taking the music and were respectful of it, respectful of black metal's tradition, but we're, you know, doing our own thing with it. So for that reason, I think we've been really well received in Europe especially. And yeah, you're right, we haven't toured in the States that much, but we're about to, and I'm actually really curious to see what the response will be when we get out on the road.
And even locally, I mean, we're not too aware of what's going on, you know, in the Washington scene besides, you know, the more known bands. But, I mean, how do you feel that people take up on you guys, or it's only just, you know, whenever you play, it's just people that are, like, friends of yours?
I mean, I don't know. It's like my feeling is that underground black metal or, you know, Cascadian black metal, like our own particular unique style of black metal, and there's a lot of bands who do it. I think that it's a really, really strong part of the culture of the underground here in the Northwest. I mean, like, everyone knows about black metal, and everyone takes black metal pretty seriously. Because I think that black metal is really relevant to living in the Northwest. You know, it's culturally, or nature-wise, it has a lot in common with Scandinavia. You know, the long, dark, wet winters and a great deal of gloomy atmosphere and a lot of mysterious nature. You know, black metal, I think, should be a reflection of the landscape. It should be a representation of the occult energies of the ground that you live on, the place where you're making the music. And I think that a lot of people in the Northwest are very conscious of that sort of level to music, and for that reason, black metal has become a really important part of the underground culture here.
And would you feel that your music would have turned out differently if you would have been, you know, born or lived in the Southwest, for example? You would be playing some kind of different black metal?
Yeah, man, I'd be doing some sort of peyote desert rock if I lived in the Southwest. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that you could definitely do black metal that that was rooted in the Southwest. I mean, there's I love the Southwest. I feel a connection to it. But I think the music would sound different. I mean, I think if you were really honest about really honest with yourself, I think you wouldn't play music about icy, cold winters if you lived in Tucson, for instance. Yeah, I think maybe you should be singing about the mesas and the thunderstorms and you know, sort of.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, different take on it. And I mean, now that you see the album out, I mean, you're starting to hear what people listen about, what people say about it. How pleased are you guys? So you guys don't pay attention to that?
Yeah, I don't really pay attention too much. I'm happy with it, which I guess is kind of the most important thing. And honestly, this is the first record we've done that I'm content with. In the past, you know, there's always a thousand things that you wish you could have done differently, or things that you would have changed. And on this record, I feel as though we actually accomplished what we set out to do, and I'm pleased with the way that it turned out. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that we built a studio in our house in Olympia, and so we were able to take a lot of time with it. You know, oftentimes in the past, you're rushed because you're paying for studio time, and you got to move really quickly. And that's a good thing in a lot of cases because it forces you to really get down to it and make something, you know. But for this record, we knew that we need to take a bit more time, especially to create the more orchestral and psychedelic drone-y parts of the record. And so we were really lucky to be able to do that. And I'm glad that Randall was willing to come down to our studio in Olympia and work here and really get in the zone with us.
And how do you feel that the differences, I mean, you probably, you guys, you and your brother work together, so, I mean, you're whipping out songs. How do you feel that it's different between doing that with two people in sync that, you know, trying to incorporate maybe other band members and stuff that probably doesn't always go according to what you exactly want?
Yeah, that's true. I think that one reason this record, I think, turned out really well is because, you know, there wasn't any debates during the songwriting. For the most part, Nathan and I trust each other to make decisions and to write songs. And if we have, you know, suggestions for each other, you know, it's not like egos are involved. You know, we're both wanting to make the best record possible. And in the past, yeah, it's a problem because there's, you know, Nathan and I, of course, have a really strong united vision and we've been working together for a long time. And I don't envy the person who has to be the third wheel in that relationship. I think it's probably a pretty tough position to be in. But by the same, you know, that being said, there's usually been a third member of Wolves in the Throne Room in the past. Will Lindsay played guitar on Black Cascade, and Rick Dolan played guitar on Two Hunters and Died on the 12 Stars. And both those guys contributed a lot, especially Rick. You know, he wrote, you know, at least a third of the material on Two Hunters and contributed a lot of really good material to it. So I don't want to, put down their contributions to the band in the past.
And what would be, what's going to be your live lineup for the upcoming tour?
It'll be Nathan and myself, obviously, and then we have a new session guitar player from Portland who's an old friend of ours who will be doing all of the tours with us, and he did our last short round of tours in the Northwest and in Europe last winter. And he's just awesome to have on stage with us. He's another Northwestern, old-school, black metal guy. He's played in Lots of Fall from Portland and Fall of the Bastards and Oak Helm, which are all, you know, I think, pretty good black metal-oriented bands. And we just get along with him really, really good. He's really on the same page as us, kind of spiritually and lifestyle-wise. It's definitely the best sound that we've ever had on stage. I'm really, really pleased with our live performance nowadays.
And how much samples and, you know, backing tracks and, you know, all this special features do you guys use, or how, or you just try to bring it down to a more raw, normal, you know, what you see is what you get sound?
Well, we've always had a pretty extensive back line, so we can have a more orchestrated sound. Cody and Nathan both have 3 amplifiers apiece, so they, you know, play through a kind of more traditional, you know, JCM 800, Ampeg V4 sort of stack for the kind of heavier guitar sounds, and then a couple of Fender amps that are doing a lot of the ethereal, chiming sort of guitars. And so there's just a lot of sounds coming from the guitars. And then I also have a synthesizer array back behind the drums, and I'll drop in samples sometimes, and I'll be playing a bit of synthesizer as well, sometimes with one hand while I play drums with the other hand. So, yeah, we definitely do our best to bring a really expansive and psychedelic sound to the live arena.
Oh, are you guys looking forward of lugging all your equipment around for a couple of weeks this time?
You know, actually, I don't mind lugging the equipment around. You know, on tour, you spend most of your day sitting in a van, so any opportunity to lift something heavy is kind of a welcome one. But yeah, you know, this tour, we're going to be bringing by far the most stuff we've ever brought, because, like I mentioned before, the thing about doing interviews one after the other is I forget what I've said already. But, yeah, we're bringing our own PA system on this tour. So, you know, in addition to our backline, the usual guitar amps and that sort of thing, we'll be bringing our own lighting rig and an entire PA system that's big enough for a, you know, 500-capacity room, and building that up every night. So, yeah, there's going to be plenty of lugging of cabinets and road cases around for the next 6 months.
And, you know, in terms of the venues that you're hitting this tour, which places are you more excited about visiting that you haven't done so before?
Well, you know, I've been to every city in the country a couple times, probably. And I'm not excited necessarily to visit any particular city, but I'm really excited that we're going to be playing mostly DIY venues and warehouse spaces and non-traditional venues. That's why we're bringing the PA system that I mentioned, because we're, as much as possible, not going to be playing in traditional rock clubs, which is what we've done in the past. And a lot of that was inspired by, you know, going to see our friends Doc Misteam open up for Cradle of Filth, you know. We just don't want to be in that environment. We don't want to have there be, you know, big screen TVs playing the football game, fucking Budweiser banner above the stage. You know, that's just antithetical to the atmosphere that we want to produce. So to that end, we're trying to do things on a total DIY level, an underground level, which is a big challenge, but I think it's going to be really worthwhile.
And, you know, in terms of live setting and stuff, I mean, what would be your preferred things? I mean, if you had the budget to do it, to bring the whole atmosphere with you?
I mean, ideally, we'd be playing outside every night. I think at least a few of the shows on this tour will be in outdoor venues, which I'm especially looking forward to. But, of course, you know, putting on a rock show for 400 people is a pretty big logistical undertaking, and it's rare that you can find a place outdoors that has, you know, beautiful ambience, but also has all of the logistical support that you need in terms of power and stage and you know, cover in case of weather and this sort of thing. So, you know, I wish we could do more outdoor shows.